Today's shiur is Masechet Ksubos Daf Ayin Vav. We will begin on Daf Ayin Hey Amud Beis, 16 lines from the bottom, Rava Amar. As the Gemara pointed out in the previous shiur, the beginning of the Gemara, we have a stira from the Reisha to the Sefer, it seems, in our Mishnah. The Reisha said that if a man was Ma'aris a woman, and then it turns out that she was a balas mum, unknown to him, the father has to bring a raya that she only became a balas mum after the erusin, and therefore was the bad fortune of the husband. Otherwise, the husband doesn't have to pay the ksuba. Whereas the sefer says that if she only was discovered to be a balas mum after the nesuin, and the husband wants to terminate the marriage, unless he could prove that she was a balas mum prior to the erusin, he has to pay the ksuba. And as the Gemara said, Gemara helped us remember a Gemara that we learned on Daf Yud Beis. The Gemara said on Daf Yud Beis, Machlokes of Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Yeshua says that if a woman claims that she was violated, and that's why she's not a psula, after the erusin, and it's the husband's bad fortune, so Yeshua's words were loy mi piha anachayim. She's not the one that we trust, which is similar to what the Reish of our Mishnah says, that just because the father and the girl are claiming that it happened before the erusin, we don't trust them. Prove that she became a balas mum only after the erusin. But the sefer of the Mishnah seems to point to the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, where the woman who says, I was fine, and the stapcha sadecha, your bad luck, after the erusin, I lost my besulim, after the erusin, I became a balas mum, it's your bad luck. So Gamaliel says, we trust the woman. If the husband wants to say it's not true, he has to prove it. So the sefer seems to be pointing in the direction of Rabbi Gamaliel. So Rabbi Lezer said a teretz to answer this question. This was all in the previous year. Rabbi Lazar says that actually the two clauses of the Mishnah represent two different opinions. The Reisha represents the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua that the burden of proof is on the father and on the girl. And the Sefer represents the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, the burden of proof is on the husband. But it's really much deeper than that. If we understand Rabbi Lazar's teretz properly, this will be very relevant later in our shiur today, Mitzvah Shem. According to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua is going to hold both in the case where he discovered that she was a balas mum before the nesuin, or where he discovered that she was a balas mum after the nesuin. It's always the father's responsibility to prove that she became a balas mum after the erusin. According to Rabbi Gamliel, just the opposite. It makes no difference when it was discovered. It's always the husband's responsibility to prove that she was a balas mum before the erusin. That's Rabbi Lazar's teretz. Now the Gemara begins with Rava's teretz. Rav Amar, Reisha kan nimtzva kan hayu, Seifa nami kan nimtzva kan hayu. According to Rashi, Rava's explanation is as follows. We follow the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel. What is the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel? That we have a chazaka. The chazaka is that she was not a balas mum until the last possible moment. Cheskas aguf. And therefore, until we follow the chazaka, we should say she only became balas mum after erusin. But now there's a new concept that Rav introduces. Again, this is the way Rashi and most Rishonim explain the Gemara. There's a new concept that if this claim happened while she's still in her father's house, that weakens the chazkas haguf, and therefore the husband won't have to pay unless the father could prove that she only became a balas mum after the erusin. Whereas, if it was only discovered after the nesuin, then the chazkas haguf remains, and he has to pay the ksuba if they terminate the marriage, unless he could prove that she was a balas mum before the erusin. Eisvei Abaya asks Abaya on this explanation of Rava, if the Braisa says that if the woman was taken into the husband's rishos, and she turns out to be a balas mom, habal tzorch lohavi raya, the husband has to bring a raya, she'ach lo tis aris hoiba mumen, that the mumen was there before erisin, v'hoi mecha mechatos, and therefore it was a mechatos. What do we see here? Ach lo tis aris in, or what does he have to prove? That the mumen were there before the erisin. And if the mumen was there before erisin, so then it was a mekachtosh. What is a mimishitaris? But let's say he only could prove that she was a balas mum after the erisin, loy. That won't help him. That won't be good enough for him. And if he wants to terminate the marriage, he has to pay the ksuba. Ask the gemar v'amai, le'makan nintz v'kan hayu. We just said that if the mumim are there while she's still in her father's home, then the burden of proof is on the father. So as long as the husband should be able to prove that she was a balas mum while she was in her father's home after the erisin, that's a switch, the burden of proof, from him to the father, from the husband to the father. Why does the Gemara say that he has to prove much earlier, prior to the erisin? Amalei, Mishnas Arsa, Vamai, that's the Gemara, once he was able to prove that she was a balas mum when she was by her father, it should become the father's obligation to prove that those mumim only occurred after the erisin. If she was already in arusa, and that's the best he could prove when she became a balas mum, shadikla meima chazaka ein adam shoyis because elam kein baitkai. Nobody is going to marry a woman without properly examining. It must be that if he did erisin with this woman, it must be that he was aware that she was a balas mum, and he accepted her for the way she is. So ask the Gemara, if so, what's the difference if he could prove that she was a balas mum before the erisin? Say the same concept. Say it as a concept. Yes, she was a balas mum before the erisin, but the husband accepted the mumen. El amrinen, we must say, chazaka ein adam mefayis b'mumen. We can assume that no husband is going to want to marry a balas mum. So says the Gemara, if you have that chazaka, hachanami chazaka ein adam mefayis b'mumen. So even if it happened after the erisin, we could say that he wasn't aware of it, because had he been aware of it, he would have never been ma'arisar. Says the Gemara al-Mishnas Arsa, if he only could prove that she was a balas mum after the erisin, so there are two chazakas in her favor. Number one, Mishum the Ikatati chazaka. There are two chazakas in her favor. Number one is the old cheskas haguf. Hamid haguf cheskasa. We could assume that she became a balas mum later. Because again, what does a cheskas haguf always tell us? A cheskas haguf always tells us that the problem that we have in front of us came in the last possible moment. She was fine until the last possible moment. Furthermore, we have a chazaka that he must have examined and checked her out before he did erisin. He knew she was a balas mum and accepted her. My amrit, what are you going to say? But we have a different chazaka. The chazaka ain adam mefayis b'mumen. That a person doesn't accept or will not want to marry a girl who's balas mum. So that chazaka is a good chazaka. But it's one havachoda. The chazaka of ein ad mefayis b'mumin versus the two chazakas of cheskas haguf and chazaka ein ad mshoyis b'kais el boit goy, the two chazakas prevail over the one chazaka. Havachoda b'makum trey b'makum tati lo yamina. And Rashi asks, but there's another chazaka here, cheskas mumin. He's holding on to the money. So shouldn't that be a chazak in his favor? So now we should have two chazakas in his favor versus the two chazakas in her favor. So Rashi says a very big chiddush that a chazaka that's not based on cheskas mumen is a much stronger chazaka than a chazaka that's based on a cheskas mumen. So when we have no other chazakas to consider, so the halacha looks at cheskas mumen. But when we have other chazakas to consider, cheskas mumen doesn't play a role at all. And therefore, the only three chazakas that are relevant in this discussion are the cheskas haguf, The chazaka ain't on the shoyes because elm came by guy, and the chazaka ain't on the mafias be mumin. The cheskes mumin doesn't play a role. However, achlis aris. On the other hand, if he could prove that the mumin was there before the erison, hamin haguf a chazaka like lameimer, we can no longer follow the cheskes haguf because here we know for sure that she was a balas mum prior to the erison. Mayika, so what chazakas are relevant? One is the chazaka that Adam Shoyes because Elm came by guy. Nobody's going to marry a girl unless he examines her for high rov in the fayasu, and he must have known that she's a balas mum and accepted her the way she is. On the other hand, we have a chazaka and Adam Mephias for mumen. So here we only have two chazakas that are relevant. And these two chazakas go in different directions. There's a chazaka of Ein Adam Shoyes because Elm came by guy. The high rov in the fayas works in her favor. And then we have a chazaka of Ein Adam Mephias for mumen, that nobody's going to want to marry a girl that has a mum. So now these two chazakas clash. So what do I do? Since we have a status quo, Haman Mamel Cheskosai. And like Rashi continues to explain, even though we said a moment ago we don't follow Cheskos Mamen, we don't follow Cheskos Mamen when we have other Chazakas. However, when we come to a point where all the Chazakas we have bring us to a standstill, then we can use Cheskos Mamen to help us decide the Halacha. That was the second way of explaining the Mishnah. Now the Gemara offers a third explanation of our Mishnah. The difference between the Reish and the Sefer. Reish, Rav Asher, Reish, Manal, Abba, B'yotcha. Again, what is our question, just to review? Our question is that the Reish seems to follow the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, of Loi Mipi Anachayim. We can't trust the girl or a father. The burden of proof is on them. And the Sefer seems to point that the burden of proof is on the husband. Says the Gemara, in the Reish, there was no Nisun yet. She was still only in Arusa. As we've discussed so many times, if a girl who's not a bogeris yet becomes an arusa, and then that marriage terminates, and she's entitled to a ksuba payment, who gets the payment? The father. So we want to rely, that's the way Rashi and the Sheet explained the Gemara, we want to rely on her cheskes haguf to say that when there was an erison, she wasn't yet a balas mum. Who will that cheskes haguf benefit? It won't benefit her, because she's not going to collect the money. It's going to benefit her father. Say to Rishonim in explaining Rav Ashi's teretz, a cheskes haguf could only help the person who has the cheskes haguf. It can help the woman herself, but it can't help her father, which is really difficult to understand. The Rishonim have a difficult time explaining it, and I'll tell you why. Where do we have a very good example of a cheskes haguf? We have an example of a cheskes haguf is, let's say somebody goes to the mikveh. We all know a mikveh has to have a minimum of 40 saw. So let's say somebody went to the mikveh this morning. This afternoon we examine the mikveh and we see the mikveh doesn't have the proper shear. Last night we examined it. Yesterday afternoon we examined it. It was fine. So do we say that the person who went to the mikveh is tahor or not? So we have a cheskes haguf, we have a chazaka, the last night the mikveh was fine. Now we indeed see that the mikveh is not fine, but we rely on the chazaka that the mikveh is a kosher mikveh. Now the chazaka of the mikveh has nothing to do with me. Yet we're relying on the chazaka of the mikveh to help me. So why can't we say that the chazaka of the woman should help her father?
He has a cheskes
tameh, so it's even worse. And he's still considered tar. So here certainly we should rely on her chazaka to help her father. So the Mefarshim answer, the Rivah discusses this, and the Rivah says that there's another concern here. The father can't be sure when the mum formed, because the mum isn't in his body, the mum is in his daughter's body. So he's only a Shema. So we have two problems here. It's a chazaka that's not on him, it's a chazaka that's relevant to his daughter, and he can't be 100% certain of any claim, because he doesn't know for sure when the mum formed. That's why a chazaka like this cannot help him. And therefore, if he wants to collect money from the husband, he has to be able, the burden of proof is on the father. However, in the Sefer, there it's manali biyotcha. What's the case of the Sefer? There was already nisuin. So if the marriage will terminate, who's going to get the ksuba payment? The woman herself. For the woman herself, her cheskes haguf can help her. Eisvei Abaya, Eisvei Rav Reider Rav Avya Lervashi. So Rav Acha asks on Ravashi's explanation of the Mishnah. It says in Otosefta, in explaining the case of our Mishnah, Moid Rameya, Rameya agrees, the mum in Haroyin Lova Ima Beis Avia, that if there's a mum that the woman has, that makes sense that it came from prior, even though it's already after the Nesuin, Shala Ovla Haviraya. In other words, what Ramey is teaching us is that if the mum that the girl has is such a mum, and the Gemara is going to give an example in a moment, that certainly was there from before, then even though it was only discovered after the Nesuin, the burden of proof is on the father. Shall Avla Havi Raya? Ask the Gemara if it's after the Nesuin. And Rav Ashi just taught us that after the Nesuin, since the two claimants are the husband and wife, and she has a cheskes aguf that she always collects, so why is the burden of proof on the father, according to Ravashi's explanation? She's asking for the money. It's after the nesuin. Says the Gemara, hachamai skinin be seris. We're dealing with a mum that she has an extra finger. An extra finger certainly didn't grow today. It was there from birth. It's apparently a birth defect. And therefore, that mum didn't develop after the nesuin. There the cheskes aguf can't tell us that we said that the mum came in the last possible moment. It must have been there from before, and therefore it's the father's burden of proof. And the Ramban explains, when the Gemara speaks about an extra finger, interesting Ramban, says it's not an extra finger on the hand. Because the husband can never claim, I didn't know you had this mum. Everybody sees people's fingers. It's an extra finger on the foot. Where the husband says, you have this mum. And that's a mum that he wouldn't necessarily see. She wears shoes. And therefore, it's the father's burden of proof. Ask the Gemara, Yiseris Mai Siraya. If that's the mum, and we're telling it's the father's burden of proof, what do you want him to prove? How could he win this case? As we said a moment ago, this must have come from birth. Answers the Gemara, he can't prove that it wasn't there before the Erisin. That it only came after Erisin. That's a physical impossibility. But what he can prove is the Rav and the Fayasu. He could try to prove that you, the husband, were aware that my daughter had this defect. You accepted her, and you went to the Erisin knowing it, and now you're having a change of heart. That's all he could prove. But that doesn't affect Rav Ashi's teretz, that if it's a mum that could have come after the Erisin, then Rav Ashi, again, just to repeat for a quick moment, Rav Ashi differentiates if the mum was discovered while she's still by her father, so the father is the claimant for the ksuba money, then the cheskes aguf is weakened, and therefore the burden of proof is on the father, versus if it was only discovered after the nesuin, and the girl, the wife, is the one that's asking for the ksuba payment, so then the burden of proof is on the husband. Amar Yehuda Mishmul. There's a Mishnah Masech Kedushin. The Mishnah Masech Kedushin discusses a case where there are two individuals. One owns a donkey and one owns a cow. And they want to make a business transaction. I'll give you my donkey and you'll give me your cow. Now we all know one of the basics of halacha is that in order for a business transaction to be effective, we have to have a kinyan. It's not just that. It has to be a maisa kinyan, an act of acquisition. The most typical act of acquisition, which is the act of acquisition that we're going to learn in our Gemara, is Mashicha, taking the item that I'm buying into my rishos. The Mishnah Masechta Kedushin teaches us that let's say I make this deal with you. I'm going to give you my donkey, and you're going to give me your cow. We don't need to have two Mashichas. The moment you do Mashicha in my donkey, I own your cow, even though I didn't do Mashiach in your cow. The Mashiach of one affects the kinyan. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmul, Hamachlo par b'chamar. We made this transaction, one person's giving a cow, one's giving a donkey. Or Mashiach b'al chamar as a par. And the person who originally owned the donkey does Mashiach on the cow. V'lai hispik b'al par limshach as chamar. And before the original owner of the cow comes to get his donkey, he discovers the donkey is dead. At Shemesa Chamar. The donkey is dead. So now we have a very fundamental question. When did the donkey die? If he died before the Mashiach of the cow, so the Mashiach of the cow was a meaningless Mashiach. If it died after the Mashiach of the cow, so the original owner of the cow had a very bad day, because his donkey died right after he owned it. So the question is, who has to prove, on whom is the burden of proof? Says Rabbi Yehuda Mishmul, Al Baal Chamar Lahavi Raya, Shair Chamar Kayim B'Shas Mashiach's Paro. It's the burden of proof is on the person who now has the cow to prove that his donkey was still alive when he did Mashiach on the cow. Why? Why is the burden of proof on him? So the Rishonim, again, there are a number of explanations in the Rishonim. The most Rishonim explain because when we have this kind of Shaila, we follow Cheskes Morakama. Cheskes Morakama means that the original owner was the owner throughout. So the owner of the donkey is the owner of the donkey throughout, and the owner of the cow is the owner of the cow throughout. V'tana tana, and here is the line that we're going to be spending the rest of our shir on. V'tana tana kala. And then he added these three words, which will give us a lot to work on. That our Mishnah about the kala, who was found to be a Baal Smum, corroborates this din that we just learned. Ask the Gemara, hi kala. What's the connection, and how do we have a proof from the din that we just learned in our Mishnah to the din that the Gemara is to Shmuel's din? Eilema. So Gemara suggests from the following thing: Kala beisavia. And again, we're following Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. Halavai we could explain, understand the Gemara just with that. We said at the beginning of our shiur today that Rabbi Lazar offered an explanation. The first explanation, which was learned in the previous shiur of our Mishnah, was our Mishnah perhaps completely follows the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. According to Rabbi Yeshua, to repeat Rabbi Yeshua's famous words, Loi mipia anachayim. The burden of proof is always on the father. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, makes no difference if the girl was found to be a Baal Smum before the Nisuin, or after the Nisuin, the burden of proof is always on the father. If the father, the girl, want to collect the ksuba, they have to prove that she only became a Baal Smum after the Erusin. So the Gemara is suggesting the same thing here. If the Baal Chamor wants to keep the Parah, he has to prove that the Chamor died after the Mashiach. Kal Besaviyah. So the Mami Dami. Hasa Maisi Raya Umapik. In the case of our Mishnah, the father, or the daughter, they're really one and the same, want to collect the ksuba payment. For them to be able to collect the ksuba payment, the burden of proof is on them. Hasa, Hasa Maisi Bala Raya, and until then, aren't able to collect. What is the Baal Chamor's goal in our Mishnah, in our case? The Baal Chamor did Mashiach. The Baal Chamor wants to bring a raya that the status quo is correct. And if that will happen, he'll keep the para, and the other one will have ended up with a bad deal. So it's much easier. Here we're trying to extract payment. Here we're just trying to keep that the Baal HaChamor should keep his para. So as Rishonim explained, perhaps in a situation where I want to extract a payment from you, I need to bring a raya. In a case where I just want to hold on to what I have, the Baal HaChamor wants to hold on to the Paro that he did in Mashiach, maybe a Raya is not even required. So how could you compare the two cases?
The Baal HaChamor, when you say once the Baal HaChamor, it means the one who
did... Originally, the original Baal HaChamor. The one who owned the Chamor originally. So the Gemara says, this is the way we should explain. As we said again at the beginning of our Shir, according to Rabbi Lazar, the Sefer of our Mishnah, and I said this before, it's not only the Seif, it's also the Reisha, represents the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel. According to Rabbi Gamliel, the burden of proof is always on the husband. Again, makes no difference before Nisun or after Nisun. The burden of proof, she says, I was fine by the Erusin. You're claiming I was a Baal Smum. Alecha lavi raya. The husband has to bring a raya. So Amar of Abba, Kal Beis Chamel. The Gemara's raya is from Rabbi Gamliel. The Kati Leidami, Hosam Baal Maisi Raya, Omar Lecheskida Av. That means the father, we have a cheskes aguf that the girl was not a balas mum. The husband comes and he wants to break that chazaka. Say, yes, she was a balas mum already by the erusin. In other words, let's explain it this way. In our Mishnah, the cheskes haguf works in whose favor? In our Mishnah, the cheskes haguf works in the favor of the father and the daughter. That she was not a balas mum until the last moment. And therefore, you want to say that she was a balas mum earlier. The husband wants to say that she was a balas mum earlier. It's his burden. Here, it's just the opposite. If we're going to follow the cheskes haguf, what's the cheskes haguf say? That the parah was alive until the last possible moment. If we say that the parah was alive till the last possible moment, then he will win. So it's just the opposite goal. Here, the cheskes haguf works in the favor of the person making the claim, in the case of the parah and chamar. Here, the cheskes haguf works in favor of the person not making the claim. So how could you use our Mishnah to be a proof to that case? And as we learned this Gemara, it seems quite esoteric and somewhat even difficult. It's very relevant to an interesting Shaila. The Shaila is asked in two ways. We know that the halacha is if someone loses one of his close relatives and he has to sit shiva, but let's say he wasn't informed immediately of the patira. So if he finds out of the patira within 30 days, he has to sit a full shiva. If he finds out only after 30 days, he only sits shiva for an hour. Let's say, again, it was a world once without telephones and emails. So let's say somebody got a letter that his relative died. And he doesn't know, by the time he gets the letter, is it still in the shleishim or is it after the shleishim? So does he sit shiva for 7 days? Or does he sit shiva for 1 hour? Or another shaila. This is a shaila I saw halach l'maisa. There was a person, Nebuch, living alone, an elderly person, who was visited Shabbos afternoon. He was fine. In the early afternoon. Then Matzoi Shabbos, they came to his home, and he was dead. And the question is, when did he die? Did he die on Shabbos? Or did he die on Sunday? What's the yard site? So, many Paiskim, the Meramins, the Noi de Yehuda, most Paiskim say, we have a Cheskes Chai, that the person was alive to the last possible moment that we know he wasn't. So therefore we have to assume that he died Matzoi Shabbos, not Shabbos. We have to assume that it's still within the Shloshim. Says the Taz, I'll prove to you from our Gemara that that's not true. Because in our Gemara, when we speak about the case of the Parah and the Chamor, and we know that the Chamor died. The question is, when did he die? So we say that we have a whole question. Why don't we say Cheskes Chai, that he died in the last possible moment? Says the Taz, I would take have a Cheskes Chai. We say, we could only rely on a Cheskes Chai when we know that the person is alive. What's the example? Where does the Gemara use this chazaka? The halacha is that only, let's say I owe the Beis HaMikdash Kar Mechatas. But I don't want to go bring my own Kar Mechatas to the Beis HaMikdash. So I ask a shliach to bring it on my behalf. And again, we don't live in a world of telephone. So somebody sends a Kar Mechatas to the Beis HaMikdash. And how does the shliach know that when he's actually offering the Kar Mechatas, the person who sent it is still alive? Can't call him on the phone. The kohen didn't have a cell phone to call and see he's still alive. So what's the answer? Cheskes Chai. That the person sent it was alive when he sent it. We can assume, Baruch Hashem, he should be alive and well. But that's only when we have no reisa. But here since the Cheskes Chai is a chazoka that is not a chazoka that has to remain like that forever, everybody ultimately, unfortunately, passes away. So therefore, it's a chazaka osu l'shtanois. And a chazaka osu l'shtanois is a different type of chazaka. And that's why in our Gemara, he says we don't rely completely on the Cheskes Chai. Says the Noi de Yehuda, you can't bring a rai from our Gemara. Because in our Gemara, we're dealing with mammon. So you want to collect, you can't collect on a chazaka that was weakened. But in a case of not mumen, we should be able to rely on the Cheskes Chai, and therefore the Noid of Yehuda paskins, and I saw a Moshe paskins that way. Also, in the case when we don't know when the person died on Shabbos or Matzah Shabbos, we could assume that he died on Matzah Shabbos, rely on the Cheskes Chai. It's interesting to note that I saw from Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, nowadays medical examiner could do some sort of analysis and determine the moment of death. So could we rely in our Shaila, where we don't know if the person passed away Shabbos or Sunday, could we rely on analysis, on medical analysis, to determine the moment of death? And he says, yes, you can. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak. So we're still trying to prove, how do we know from our Mishnah this thing? Amar Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak, Kala Beis Avila Kedushin. There's a din that we haven't spoken about, and this is the way the Rajba explains this Gemara. Besides the claim of Ksuba, that the husband says he doesn't have to pay the Ksuba, and the girl and the father claim that they are entitled to the Ksuba, there's another claim on the table here. The husband gave Kedushin money to the wife. If the Kedushin was a Mekach Tos, he wants the money back. So now, we're not talking about getting money, that the father and the daughter want money. We're talking about holding on to the money that they already received, which is very similar to our case of the Chamor and Parah. Holding on to the Parah that I already received. So our Gemara has been till now saying that you can't compare the case of our Mishnah to the case of the Parah and Chamor. Here it's about extracting new money. Here it's about holding on to the power that I already have. So the Gemara, our Mishnah is also speaking about holding on to the kess of Kedushin that the girl and her father already have. And like the Rajba says, who says that our Mishnah is talking about the kess of Kedushin? There's no mention of that money in our Mishnah, says the Rajba. If the din on the money of the Kedushin were different than the din on the money of the Ksuba, the Mishnah should have made that dichotomy. The fact that the Mishnah doesn't even bother discussing the Kess of Kedushin is the best proof that the Kess of Kedushin the girl and the father already keep. That's what it says. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Kala Beis Avila Kedushin. But now the Gemara refers to a Gemara Masechta Baba Basra. The Gemara Masechta Baba Basra discusses the following case. Let's say there was a Kedushin between a man and a woman. And the man gave the Kala Kess of Kedushin, gave her a ring. Typical way Kedushin is conducted. And then that Erusin doesn't consummate in a suin. The husband dies, Rechmal Islam. The question is his estate entitled to get back the Kess of Kedushin? It's a machloikis mesecht of a basra. One man d'amah holds, Kess of Kedushin le tabuin. Tabuin means sunk, drowned. When a husband gives a wife Kess of Kedushin, it's no going back with Taboon. That money's drowned. He has no expectation of ever getting back that money, even if it doesn't get completed to a Nisuin. Another man says, no. The Kess of Kedushin is only given on the assumption that there's going to be a Nisuin. If there's not going to be a Nisuin, he gets his money back. So said the Gemara, light tamer, leave the man Kedushin, lav with Taboon. So according to the man Omer, that the husband only gives the Kedushin money with the assumption that there will be ultimately a Nisuin. And here, there isn't going to be a Nisun, because he claims there was a Mekach Tos, so he certainly wants his money back, and the fact that the father and the girl have to prove it is a raya that it's his. Ela filamandam kedushin letbunetnu, that once he gives the Kess of Kedushin money, he doesn't expect it back, says the Mahanimil Kedushin Vadai. That's only when there was a real Kedushin. And then, like we explained a second ago, something came up to prevent it to come into completion with a Nisun. The husband died, Rahman Slan. Ava kedusha tos, but let's say as in our case, it kedusha tos, imay sirai in, iloi loy. So now let's go all, figure out our Gemara. Here the father's holding on to the Kess of Kedusha money. So he's the one that's holding the Kess of Kedusha money. Yet the burden of proof, according to Rabbi Yeshua, is on him that the girl was not a balas mum by the Erisin. So the same thing here in our Mishnah, even though the Bala Chamor is holding on to the Parah, the burden of proof is on him that the Chamor was still alive b'shas the Mashiach was done. Meisvei, however, asked the Gemara a question on this. Just another word of introduction. Gemara Masechta Chulin. The Gemara Masechta Chulin describes a kosher animal. You all know that one of the characteristics of a kosher animal is malagera. It chews its cud. What does that mean? So Gemara says that a kosher animal, kosher cow, has four stomachs. The first stomach is called the keres. The second stomach is called a base hakoisis. It's called the base hakoisis because it looks like cups. It has that type of a shape. The animal, when it chews food, it goes from the keres to the base hakoisis, and then it regurgitates back to the mouth, malagera, and from there it goes to the hemsis, which is the third stomach, and from there it goes to the keva, which is the fourth stomach. In the Gemara Masechta Chulin, when it describes these the anatomy of an animal and describes what makes an animal a treifa, says the following. If a needle was found in the second stomach, if the needle did not pierce through the entire thickness of the stomach, share the animal's kosher. If it pierced through, it's treifa. And the Gemara gives us there ways of being able to tell. Nimtzala kurtam. If there's blood on this needle, bidua shulf. Now, the question is, just one obvious question. We find the needle pierced through all the way. Now the question is, that needle might have only come pierced the skin after the shechita. After the shechita, it's not a problem. Or it might have pierced before the shechita, and it is a problem. So the Gemara teaches us. Nimtzala kurtam. If we find blood on this needle, b'yidua shifnei shechita. That's obvious that that piercing was before the shechita. Lo nimtzala kurtam. If it was no dam found on this needle, b'yidua shelach shechita. That the piercing was after the shechita. Let's say you don't have the needle. You see a hole, but you don't have a needle to be able to use to determine when that hole was made. So we have to assume that the animal is a treifa. We have to be machmer. Something to rise to l'chumra. So now we have the following situation. I sold you an animal. And Rabbeinu Ephraim helps us understand the Gemara, Arishan. I sold you an animal. You open up the animal, and you find that there's a hole from going right through the base of kaisis. No needle available to examine. You, the buyer, say you sold me an animal that's a treifa. And therefore, the mekach is a mekach tos. I, the seller, say, prove it. As far as I'm concerned, it only got pierced after the shechita, after I sold it to you. So we have now a disagreement. And Rabbeinu Ephraim says, you know, whenever you buy something, you don't know what you're going to get. So he says, if what you bought is something that is very likely to happen, so unless you clearly stipulate that if it has this mum, the deal is void, then it's your bad luck. So he says, therefore, a sircha. Sircha is a lesion on the lung, which is very common in an animal. If it has a sircha, unless you stipulated that you're not going to take possession, if it has a sircha, it's your bad luck. On the other hand, a needle, a piercing of a basic kaisis is very infrequent. So you could say mekach tos. But now we have here this disagreement. So the Gemara there keeps on giving us pointers how to determine. Hugla piyamaka. If there's a scab over this hole, b'yidush shloshi yom kadem shechita. We know that this scab must be at least 3 days old. Meaning, a wound does not form a scab unless it takes at least 3 days. So that means, if I sold this animal to you, today, Thursday, you discover that it has a scab. That means the wound must have been there from Tuesday. If I only sold you the animal on Wednesday, for sure it was a treif by me. But let's say loy hogel piyamaka. We don't have a scab. So we don't have that way to determine when did this animal become treifa. And now we have this disagreement. The loch is a much mechaver all of haraya. You, whoever, the yov tabach dame. So therefore, if you, the tabach, the butcher, the buyer, paid for it, boy lasui raya umapik. The only way you could get the money back from me is if you could prove that it was a treifa when I sold it to you. Says the Gemara, according to Rami Bar Yechezkel's explanation, for my Baal Behemah Leis Raya V'Noikim, just like the Baal HaChamor, who wants to hold on to the Paro, has to prove that the Chamor died after the Mashicha, I, the seller, should have to prove that it became a treifa only after I sold it to you. Says the Gemara of Noikim, we explained the Braisa, but the Loya of Tafchadami. It's referring to a situation where you, the buyer, the butcher, did not pay for it. I'm coming to you to claim my payment, and you say, prove that it wasn't a treifa when you sold it to me. Says the Gemara, Loy Pascha, but that's difficult to explain. Because if that's the case, that that Gemara Mesech Techulin is only referring to a situation where the buyer did not yet pay for the animal, the Gemara should have said that. That there's a difference if the butcher paid or didn't pay. So from there we see that if I'm holding on to the money, possession is 9/10 of the law. Then I hold it. So the same thing should be by the Baal HaChamor. If the Baal HaChamor is holding on to the para, it should be his, unless the Baal para could prove that the animal, that the para died before the Mashiach. And therefore, Rabbi Bar Yechezkel changes what he said. Don't pay attention to what Yehuda said. If the suffix happened in his rishus, all of Lahavi Raya, the Raya is on his point, the Tanatana Kula, and the same proof is by the Kala. Just like by the Kala in our Mishnah, it's the burden of proof on the husband, here too the burden of proof is on the Bala Parah. And if the Chabal Chamar has the Parah, he holds on to it until the Baal HaParah to prove that the Chamor died before the Mashiach of the Parah. Meisai, but not a Gemara, asked the question, repetition of the whole Gemara, if the butcher did not yet pay, Baal Behemah boiler suraya mapik. The Baal Behemah has to bring a proof that the animal was kosher when he sold it. Now, the butcher has the animal, so he should have to prove it. Answers the Gemara, the Yov Tavich Tamei. He already paid. Asked the Gemara, my Pascha. But just like we asked before, that now we're explaining that Gemara only works if the butcher already paid. So if the butcher didn't pay, it would be a different din. So why does the Gemara there make a blanket ruling? It should differentiate if the butcher paid or not paid. Says the Gemara, it doesn't make that differentiation. Because Tam de Milsa, Kam de Layav in Izuzi, generally until a person pays, Layav in Ishchayusa. Nobody gives the merchandise until he receives payment. We learned in the Mishnah, V'cham Amr B'medvar Mum Mum Shibaseisa. Where could the husband claim that she was a Balas Mum, and therefore the Mekach was a Mekach Tos? It was a Mum that he couldn't necessarily see. So the Gemara goes to explain one type of Mum. Amr Rav Nachman, the Nichma, so as Rishonim explained, Nichva is an epileptic. But apparently there are two types of epileptics. There are epileptics that are only have seizures during certain times of the day. And then there are epileptics that can have a seizure any time of the day. Says the Gemara, an epileptic that has a seizure only during specific times of the day is considered Mumin Shebeseser. Because she and her father can make sure that her husband will never see her during that time. Nichva is Mumin Shebeseser Dami. However, Vahani Mili, when is it considered Mumin Shebeseser, the Kvile is man, that she always has her seizures during a specific time. Avaloi Kvile, if there isn't a specific time when she has her seizures, Kamun Shebegaladami, because she can never prevent him from seeing her, and therefore he can't claim that I didn't know. Just one interesting Piskei Tshuva. The Piskei Tshuva, based on this Gemara, says an interesting halakha. Let's say somebody buys an esrig in a closed box. And then when he opens up the esrig, he finds that the esrig is not kosher. He says, just like in our Gemara, when somebody buys an animal, and then when he opens up the animal, he finds it's a treif. And if he knows for sure there was treif before the sale took place, then the sale is void. Similarly, if somebody bought an esrig in a closed box, nothing happened to the esrig in the box. So if it was possible, it must become possible from before, he could go back and claim that the sale is void. However, as the Piskei Tshuva, that if the minhag hamakom is that when somebody does a business transaction, let's say I buy an esrog in a closed box, and the minhag hamakom is it's mine no matter what, then the minhag hamakom supersedes any other halachas, and then it's my bad fortune that I would be stuck with the esrog that's possible.